As we have come ever so close to this end of the liturgical year, we're in week 32. We have two more weeks of this ordinary time, and then we begin a new liturgical year with the first Sunday of Advent in 3 weeks. And we're in year A, so we've been listening to Matthew's gospel. In these last 3 weeks, we get to hear Matthew 25, chapter 25 in its entirety, where we hear about the final judgment. Today we hear about the virgins, next week's about the talents, and the third week is about the sheep and the goat. So these virgins, the five wise and the five foolish, some had oil, some didn't. And then this very interesting look at a wedding celebration. There are lots of details here and caveats here that help us to break open this parable about the different details that are given. The Jewish custom of their wedding celebrations is radically different than what we have in America today. But the notion of the wise virgins, it ties to the first reading. The posture of those five, this posture of expectation, of anticipation. They were ready for whatever may come, whenever it may come. They had prepared, they were vigilant, they were persevering, and they were ready. And this is what we hear about in the first reading from the Book of Wisdom. She is readily perceived by those who love her and found by those who seek her. She makes herself known in anticipation of their desire. Whoever watches for her at dawn shall not be disappointed. This wisdom, this knowledge, this experience of God's views of the world, this expectation being met. And this is what's at heart of that gospel passage. Not to get lost in the details of the wedding celebration. Because the five foolish virgins received a pretty harsh response. Something I hope to never hear. I do not know you. As we knock on the door of the heart of Jesus, I do not know you. Could there be anything worse? So he didn't say, get away, you don't have enough oil. Get away, you didn't prepare well. I don't know you. There's a reason for their sentence, for their judgment. How many marriages have failed or are failing, and one spouse can look to the other and say, I don't even know you anymore. That's what's here in the pages of the scriptures. That lack of intimacy, the lack of familiarity, that lack of knowledge. And a few weeks back when we had the great commandment to love God, I reminded us that we can't love someone that we don't know. That we have to get to know God in order to love God. So, do we know God? Do we love God? Are we persevering in the faith that was delivered to us in our baptism? Because that's when our lamp was first lit. That's when we first received the faith, the hope, the love that's required of us as disciples. And when children are baptized and when adults are baptized, a candle is given to them. And the admonition to be kept, have that candle kept burning brightly as a sign of the light of Christ in their lives. Both groups fell asleep. Both groups got drowsy, got tired. Sometimes our journey in life is long, and the answer is long delayed. Do we have the faith to persevere? Are we watching and waiting with expectant faith as those who have hope? Or do we grieve, as St. Paul said in the second reading, as those with no hope? That second reading is talking about those who have died. And there was anxiety about what would happen to them because they thought that no one would die until Christ came back. And Christ was long delayed and people were dying. What was going to happen to them? And this is that first real teaching we have in the scriptures about the resurrection of Jesus and how we are incorporated into that and we can receive the same benefit that we share in that inheritance of the resurrection. But we also, maybe in a smaller way, we grieve when we don't get our way, when things don't go the way that we had planned. We often lose hope and we turn to something or someone else when our needs don't seem to be met right away. Do we have the faith to persevere? Do we have the hope to keep going so that along the way we can love? This is what it's all about. St. Thomas Aquinas, in his summary of all theology, speaks of the vice that could, the sin that could simply be interpreted, translated as curiosity. We live in an age of information. We're probably not an age of wisdom. We can press a button and this little machine in our pocket can tell us any answer to any question in the whole world. Sometimes it does it even we don't really want it to. It's just listening and gives us answers. We're bombarded with information overload. And what that has done for so many people is stoked this vice of curiositas, this desire just to know. You have the capacity to have knowledge. You have a desire to know. But to know God and the things of God for the right reason and the right purpose. But when we swim in this vice of curiosity, of just wanting to know things, we misdirect. We are not oriented in the right way with the beautiful gift of desiring knowledge that God has given us. And then we lose out on the wisdom. We lose out on the knowledge. Then it becomes more difficult to love. One of the main ways, maybe the only way, to come to a real knowledge of God is to cultivate silence in our life. So how much silence do you cultivate in your life? Do you practice it? The French Catholic philosopher in the 1600s, Blaise Pascal, says all of man's misfortune comes from one thing, not knowing how to sit quietly in a room. It's kind of a judgment against our culture, where we hate silence and we fill every vacuous space with noise. When we're driving in the car, the radio or a podcast is on. When we're at home, the music or the television is on just as background noise. Our curiosity about things has create such chaos in our hearts and our brains, we can't sit in silence. We can't come to the wisdom of the loving God. So what are some ways we can do to begin this process of cultivating silence? Just a few. Refrain from unnecessary and frivolous speech, especially gossip and slander. But don't feel a need to say something just because there's a void in the conversation. Refrain from complaining and criticizing. And resist that urge to share every one of your thoughts and opinions. And as I said, resist that urge to fill the spaces with noise, with entertainment. Fight that urge. Resist that temptation. Give God permission to speak to your heart. Because as the gospel said, we don't know the day or the hour, but we must be prepared. As we get to the end of the year, these messages, these gospels, the consequence of them do get a little heavier. But we can never forget what St. Paul tells us. We don't grieve as those who have no hope. We live in a state of grace by God's grace. We live in faith, hope, and love. We live as children of the living God, who are in some way already tasting the abundant life that He has prepared for us and is waiting for us. But if we do the hard work of waiting for Lady Wisdom, of sitting in silence and allowing God to speak to our hearts through prayer, through the scriptures, then we really have nothing to fear. We will be part of those wise virgins, the ones who have persevered and are prepared well. We should be afraid of that response. Depart. I don't even know who you are. But we never have to be in that position. We never have to settle for that. The Lord is inviting us each and every day to hear His voice again. To die to this idle curiosity, to practice silence, to anticipate, to expect, to encounter wisdom, the mind and the heart of God our Father, so that we can come to know Him in a real, intimate way, so that in turn we can learn to love Him. And instead of hearing, "I do not know you," we will hear those sweet words, "Well done, my good and faithful servant. Enter into your master's joy."